How long have you been with your therapist? Oh, 5 years and you're still dealing with the same issue. Interesting.
That's exactly right.
Hey, podcast listener, even if you are alone in your entrepreneurial journey, know that today, right now in your earbuds, you are joined by thousands of entrepreneurs from all around the globe seeking to grow better, more profitable, location-independent businesses. If you'd like to learn more about what we do and download our entire back catalog, check out tropicalmba.com.
Happy Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Ian, this is our first video podcast, and I have my haircut scheduled after the show.
I'm terrified right now.
Tells you a little bit of something about my time management techniques.
It's like, got to put the hat on. Last night, I was like, okay, I guess I shave on Wednesdays. No, that's what I do.
Because you want to have that fresh stubble.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, I guess we'll have this up at the YouTubes. But we'll also have like the segments of the show going out via video. You know how there's shorts, Ian?
Mm-hmm.
There's shorts out there on the web. We've been calling this meaty shorts.
We're going to do meaty shorts.
I want to take. I bought the .com in case it turns into a thing. So love this concept. There's this guy, Aaron from Ship Hero, who he just like sits down in his office, flips on the camera, and he delivers his insights about things in business. And I find that content compelling. It's like I don't have to go anywhere else to get the payoff. But obviously, I know about Ship Hero and I know about what Aaron's up to. And if I ever need his services, he's like one of the first people I'm going to think of. So I think that's a pretty effective strategy and what I'm looking forward to experimenting with here at the pod.
Well, just to be clear about like what the strategy is, too, the other day I was watching this video and it was super compelling. It was basically like the title was even compelling. It was like how to evade import taxes. Legally. Yeah. And I was like, what?
You're like, I don't import anything, but I definitely want to know.
Totally. I was like, I got to watch this. And I think it was like 5 minutes of really quality delivery on this one idea. And so far, I think the things that we've seen in the past are like these short clips that are like 30 seconds with a famous person on your podcast or a really hot take. And the idea for a couple of years was like, oh, now I have to go listen to the whole podcast. Now I have to go download it, right? Which was cool.
Yeah.
But I think what Aaron is doing is more substantial, more meaty shorts.
Meaty shorts.
I get what I want right here. I don't necessarily need to go listen to a full podcast. He's just going to give it to me. That's nice.
That's right. One thing I wanted to talk about, Ian, is we recently had our bi-monthly call with the recruiting team. And I'm always going to them like, what's going on in the recruiting layer side of this business? And the last few months, we've been talking about SDRs in LATAM and CSMs in North America largely, but also LATAM. I would call SDRs sort of in the sales and marketing realm, and CSM is sort of in the delivery realm, are our two most popular hires. And I was basically like, what do businesses hire the most for? I'm not satisfied with these two things. What else is out there and what we determined? But first, I came across this framework from Dan Martell. And Dan Martell is a guy on the web who's built a bunch of SaaS businesses. And now he coaches founders about how to improve their SaaS businesses. And he's got this framework that really resonated with me because it's something that we've seen as a pattern in our community and a best practice in general, which is that you don't hire speculatively. You hire to replace valuable tasks in your business. And typically the way these things ladder up is a pattern. And this is something Dan's bringing to the table. So here's what he says. He says, essentially, you start by replacing admin functions. Then you move on to delivery functions, then marketing, then sales, then finally, leadership. And there's a couple interesting pitfalls that I've seen. And one that Dan points out is that as those check sizes get larger, as you move into sales and leadership, emotionally, it gets extremely hard, typically for founders, right? It's easy to stick on the admin side. Oh, let's toss another admin at that. But the admin can't return you as much value, ROI, as your salesperson or as your leadership team can. So he encourages us to think about it as a percentage versus as a total number. And any poker player out there will realize this. There's very clear exploits when you're playing small stakes poker, which is to say, in fundamental poker, you should be making your bets based on a percentage of the pot, right? There's $100 out there. I'm betting $50 as half pot. The problem is when it gets to be towards the end of the game, towards the turn and river cards, when there's $700 or $1,000 out there, and now you got to put $500 out there, you should be thinking 50%. But what you're actually thinking about is three dinners,
the raw
on the town
dollar,
and my auto insurance payment. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing for businesses, right? Is that we're thinking in percentages as a way to wrap our heads around something that might not be immediately intuitive, especially when it's your money and you know exactly what you could do with it outside of the context of your business.
Well, yeah. And this is why also why it's nice to kind of get away, if it's possible in your business, to kind of get away from this idea of thinking about the money that's left in your business as your money. Because you see that as your money, and then you think, well, I can take this home and buy all these things that I've always wanted, or I could keep it in the business. And there's some uncertainty revolving around that because I don't know what next year is going to bring. Maybe I should just take it home. And so if you can kind of divorce yourself of this idea that it's actually your money, then it starts to become an investment. It starts to become maybe even a gamble for some people, like you're describing, but it doesn't become your money.
One of the things I see going back to the recruiting team conversation is trying to figure out what do business owners hire the most for? Let's build a product around that. And we arrive at this concept of a business administrator, especially for bootstrappers, is sort of a Swiss Army knife that can kind of do it all in the early days. And what we determined is that we're hiring, and they come under all different names, right? That's the thing. So we're trying to create this generalized term because you could call them VA, super VA, an EA, an operations person, client success, account manager, project manager. We're just dunking that all into business admin. Because these aren't like high-level professionals. They're typically professionals with 2 to 5 years of experience. They're based in LATAM, and we're hiring them for $2,000 to $3,000 a month. And so that's our stab at getting at that early category of admin. Whereas you move up to delivery, and now you're talking more your CSMs. You move on to marketing and sales. You're talking high-level people and the SDRs. And then we look to leadership. One of the mistakes that I see when you think about this framework of admin, delivery, marketing, sales, leadership, is at the delivery point, once you're done with delivery, Dan Martell's saying, move on to marketing. I see people kind of jump into leadership at that point. If that's you, if you're so focused on delivery that you feel like you need to skip sales and marketing and start focusing on leadership, it might be that your pricing's off. It might be you're not hiring capable enough people. There might be something messed up in your system there because I feel like that's a bit of a mistake, Ian. You should be able to get competent people to deliver on your product and then jam out on sales and marketing before you bring in the leadership team.
Yeah, I have a hypothesis on this, and I think it's because it's easier to focus on the delivery. It's just that simple. You have a product, you have some product market fit. It's like, let's sit here all day and figure out what new feature they want and deliver better and put another bow on it. That stuff is way easier than going out and marketing and selling your product.
Yeah. I mean, it's the internet equivalent of soft hands, yeah. Right? We all experience this along the way. There's these emotional fears and hangups that we encounter. So hiring high-level people, that $500 bet at the poker table. And by the way, not a speculative bet. That's the crazy part, right? Because you have been doing these things. You've been doing the sales. You've been doing the marketing. And you know there's ROI there. So we're not talking about gambling,
right?
We're talking about a game of skill. But the reason we point it out is because a lot of us do face those fears of now all of a sudden the numbers are going up. We fear that. But also like, man, I already did something very hard, which is get something off the ground. Now I want to organize it versus pressing it, which is what sales and marketing is going to do to your operation, right?
Yeah.
It's going to press it and people might churn. People might get stressed out. People might think it's a little bit ridiculous, but you don't, because you're a founder and you understand how these things work. And because you've seen the patterns, because you know it's time to move on to marketing and sales, not to necessarily organize everyone's desk. So that is sort of my reading in to the five steps in the replacement ladder, which is a Dan Martell concept. This brings me to organizing our desks. I brought this up because one of the cool things about owning a recruiting business, it's remotefirstrecruiting.com, check it out, is just seeing what founders are doing and how they're hiring. And we're trying to make adjustments to our product to try to capture more of this market, this business generalist market. And when we started this game, man, you weren't hiring business generalists in Latin America.
No, we hired it in California. I was there.
Well, yeah, we're in California and then abroad. We were looking east.
Yeah.
And I think there's two moment in time reasons for that. Number one, at the time, we're talking like 2010 timeframe, South Americans just didn't speak English to like a business level. That wasn't happening at this administrative salary level.
Right.
And then the second thing is that they just weren't as likely to bust out of their local business culture and like extend themselves to North America, which in the Philippines, that was considered exactly what to do.
Mm-hmm.
But in South America, it wasn't. I think that's completely been flipped. It's completely changed. I think someone could probably write a story about how this is tied to COVID and coming out of it, that South Americans too have now been like, yeah, this remote thing totally makes sense. I don't need to drive down the highway to go to an agency in Bogota or in Sao Paulo. I'm going to get on the web and like figure out what American company I can work for. It just feels like a thing. And we're definitely seeing it. I read a stat the other day, Ian. I'm just going to toss out some under-researched stats here. Maybe our producer can loop in and like AI my voice to get the right stat. Can you guess the ballpark number of Americans that now are hybrid or remote?
And this would be like the internet class, so we're not talking all workers.
This is like all U.S. workers.
All U.S. workers. As far as I understand. 30%?
Yeah, okay. That's right. How crazy. Like that is a complete societal shift. That is crazy town. And it's not just affecting Americans. It's affecting the whole world. And we're seeing that with the viability. All of a sudden, LATAM, LATAM, LATAM. I look at our hires and this is absolutely blowing up. So anyway, shout out to Remote First Recruiting, SDR, CSMs, and what we're calling super VAs or business administrators. Just seemed like a fresh, interesting option for listeners of the show.
You know, a downside of all this like globalization and everybody working from everywhere is my apartment costs in Barcelona this summer, I'm looking to book my place, are shooting through the roof. All right. The secret's out. Work from anywhere. Turns out it's Barcelona. So good job, guys, talking about Barcelona all the time on this podcast.
Noah Kagan did a 5-minute bit on the Tim Ferriss podcast that like Barcelona is the buy low.
I heard it.
Opportunity. 5 minutes. Every minute, it was like cha-ching, fingers on a chalkboard. Cha-ching. I was like, dude, stop it. Stop it.
Terrible. Terrible for prices.
All right. Okay. So we talked about this concept of not jumping too early to invest in leadership, but focusing on getting the marketing and sales part first. What I want to talk about is what happens when we jump to leadership is we reach for systems. Because what's happening? We are getting a bunch of clients. Now we've got admin and delivery people. There's a lot of people around the office. We get a sensation that we start to lose control. We're losing control of the quality of what's happening around the office. We're losing control of our investments and our people. We want to make sure that people are ROIing, that they're doing high quality work. So we start to look to things like EOS, the traction system. Scaling up, we start to look to business coaches. The problem can be premature optimization, focusing too much on this stuff too early in the game before you've got your sales and marketing stuff figured out. So the question becomes, what is minimum viable EOS? Let's face it, Ian, almost everybody that we've talked to, even 8-figure businesses that have, quote, EOS implemented, will immediately follow it with what percentage of EOS.
Yeah.
And this is, again, why we love hate to talk about this book, because it was clearly written with the intention in mind to complicate this process, not to simplify, but to complicate, so that you need to bring EOS certified individuals into your company. I mean, I'm sure there's tons of industries out there like this. The roadmap is simple.
Yeah. How long have you been with your therapist? Oh, 5 years and you're still dealing with the same issue. Interesting.
That's exactly right. You diagnose their problem, then you exacerbate the problem, then you complicate the problem. Then here's the best part. You codify the problem.
Yeah.
You codify it. You allow them to self-diagnose themselves as needing what you have.
Yeah. It's brilliant.
It's brilliant. And then the solution is to buy the product. Okay. The question for us, though, is we know we don't want to fall into that trap. So what is the minimum viable EOS? And I'm going to call it, forget about EOS. Let's talk about GPS. And GPS is the minimum viable EOS implementation. You can do it in less than a week. Let's say you can just get running in a week. And this stuff is good up until you bring in a genuine COO. So I'm talking multi-million dollars in revenue. Forget about EOS. We're going with GPS, baby. So here we go. GPS is three simple things. It is goals. It is a plan. And it is scorecards. Let's start with goals. Goals are the organizing principle that clarifies and settles your whole organization. They are not your personal desires. That was the early stage of running a business. Now, as we move on to organizing 5, 10, 15, 25 people, what we need is an organizing principle of the organization that simplifies everything and unites people around a simple goal. And typically that's going to be a revenue goal. Then we're going to work backwards. So it's really important that it's not like what you were doing on your dream line, or, hey, I want to go quadruple this year, or whatever those goals are for you personally. This is different than creating a clarified vision that can be repeated and animate a group of people. It's sort of like if you're building a suspension bridge, you put up those giant towers, and that's your goal, the top of the tower. The metaphor doesn't hold up, but the idea is that you string everything from the goals.
Got it.
And that's the simple concept.
So with these goals, though, how do you not fall into the trap of setting an unrealistic goal? Because this is very common. So it's like, I want to triple this year.
What a great question. I'm glad you asked. That's where the P comes in. The next step, you set a goal, and then you build a plan. You, as the founder, have to determine a way to get to the goal. And by making the plan clear as day, you can decide for yourself and with your team whether or not the goal is realistic. And that's important. You got to get buy-in. If people are going to be executing the plan, they need to say this goal is realistic. So the next step, you put a goal on paper. It might not be achievable, per your point. Then you come up with a plan. Typically, you're going to want to stick to a three-part plan. You might want to improve retention, grow leads, and then grow affiliates. So those are your three plans, okay? That's your simple plan for getting to your goal. Now, the devil's in the details. So what measurable behaviors need to happen under that three-part plan in order for you to achieve the goal? And then importantly, who can do those things? So if you believe the plan gets you to the goal, now's when you start building out the scorecards. Who owns the key elements of the plan? So you look at retention. Who in your business owns retention? What are the input habits that you suspect, along with that person, that are going to improve retention by 15% or whatever the plan is? Because the plan will lead to the revenue outcome. And this is how we're working backwards. This is why the goals are like those suspension bridge towers, that you're literally like stringing your plans from them and holding the whole bridge up. That's how it works.
Yep.
And so you're saying, look, I believe we can improve retention if we do 10% more calls with our customers every week. And then you identify two more input habits, right? And then you say, like, this person in my company, this person in delivery department owns retention. You get the buy-in from them. Can you do three more calls a week? Can you improve the email sequences? Can you tweak this thing? Okay, well, we agree communally that you can improve retention by 15%. Now, you know that that's 1/3 of the way to your goal. So again, we have goals, and we have a plan, and the S is the scorecards. You're delivering the plan onto the desks and giving that scope of responsibility. This part of the plan is on your desk. This part of the plan is on your desk. And importantly, a big part of the plan is going to be on the founder's desk. So you're giving yourself clarity about how you believe you can move the business forward, and you're staying focused on the goals as well. A lot of people are going to say, well, what about the mission, vision, value stuff? Because that's cool, right? I want to do that. I want to go on a team retreat. All this stuff shows up on the scorecard, okay? So a scorecard is simply a document that every team member has that lets them know how to contribute to the plan that will lead to the goals. GPS, goals, plan, scorecards. That is minimum viable EOS. You can do it in a week. Your mission, vision, values can be on the scorecard. So our team members will say, I want to take a second look at my scorecard based on what happened last week. They've got it pulled up on their computers. They've got clarity around what they're doing, and you've got clarity when you've gone wrong. Have you ever been in a situation, Ian, as a founder, where you see some work that happened that week and you're like, ah, that sucks. That's not what I want. My intuition does not line up with what I'm seeing. Well, now we've got a place to clarify that. Oh, shit, I put the wrong thing on the scorecard.
Yeah.
And that's totally cool. You go to the team members like, hey, my bad. When I developed this plan, I had a false hypothesis. It's been proven wrong. Can we sit down for 15 minutes and talk about ways to change the plan?
Yeah, we have these scorecards in our organization, so we should share one to the audience so they can just take a look at it. It's a very simple document. And when you say like the plan changes, I think you're right. The plan does change. The goals generally do not change. And so when you're looking at these scorecards, like you said, you have to calibrate. That's like part of the process, right? It's like you go into war and you find out that they have some weapon that you didn't know about. And it's like, oh, hold on a second here. We got to retreat and like reorganize around this. So things are going to change all the time. And your inputs are your best guesses. And those things are going to change.
Yeah, the habits are the most likely to change, then a little bit less likely your plans, and a little bit less likely your goals,
right?
As you said. They get more, less dynamic as you go up the GPS system.
Correct.
But what I've found is that it used to be in our company, I think this is the case for a lot of founders, is you walk into the office on Monday morning, you stick your thumb into the soup, you ask yourself how the broth tastes. And it's about your emotions in that moment and your sensibilities. The concept of GPS or any kind of system like this is getting your sensibilities onto a system that scales. And this is a very, very simple way to do this, which is like, all right, expert broth taster, put it on a document that other people can understand and then stand by it. And then when it doesn't work out, tweak it, tweak the recipe. That's all we're doing, is we're building a recipe to get to the goals.
Yeah, some of the most uncomfortable moments in this are actually being relaxed at your desk and just like sitting there and be like, yeah, man, this is the plan.
Everything's on track.
Everything's on track. And you're like, oh, wait, aren't I supposed to be freaking out? We got to grow $1 million this year. I got to work like 70 hours this week, right? Well, is that in the plan?
And hence the title of the book, Traction. That's the idea, is that you're chugging along, you're moving forward, but you can do it without 2 years of consulting. You can do it with GPS. You can do it in a week. The hardest part is going to be clarifying what you want for the organization. Because you know what a lot of these big goals are? You know, we're going to triple this year, blah, blah, blah. We're going to get these big accounts. It's like, yeah, well, how are you going to do that? That's the hard part. I get that you want that. What's your plan? And then see how scorecards backs you into so many important business processes. It's like, oh, well, no one owns retention. Oh, shit. That's worth a lot of money in this company. Oh, maybe I should hire somebody for retention. Because that's a good bet based on the numbers I'm seeing here. So now you got a finance function built in here. So we don't even need to talk about that. You're backing your way into these bigger systems. Goals, plan, scorecards. Scorecard, the reason I love scorecards so much is it's one simple thing that carries so many things within it. It's a management technique. It backs you into financial questions. It sets culture. It sets accountability. There's just so much career progression, HR. It's a one-page document.
Yeah.
But it's pulling in so much intelligence about what you think the future of the company is going to be and how this person is going to contribute to it. Okay, so the final piece, you've got your GPS. You've taken a Saturday afternoon to figure this stuff out. You're going to go in fresh to the team and you're going to get back on track. You're going to clarify how to reach your goals. The final piece is you just develop a pulse. And a pulse is a fancy way of saying, when are your standing meetings? So you want to be careful here because you don't want your life to turn into a series of standing meetings, but they're the simplest way, a meeting with a clear agenda that the person you're meeting with has the plan for the meeting every week.
Correct.
Has the agenda. So this is going to be different for different types of orgs. You're going to want to have standing meetings with department heads. You don't want to have more than five people that you're dealing with. That's important. You want to have a quarterly 101 with each of your direct reports. That's going to be when you talk about your scorecard. Make sure the plan's on track. And then you want to have some sort of weekly team or leadership team meeting where you're checking on the goals of the company. We call it scoreboard. Every Friday morning, we show up to a meeting. There's 10 people there, and we walk through every metric in the business. The key metrics related to the plans, which are related to the goals, and this is so simple. Everything is green, yellow, or red, depending on how close to the goal we are. And it's just that simple. Most weeks, because we've set achievable goals and good plans, most weeks it's like green, 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 green. Wait, this one's yellow. Let's talk about it. Can we get it back to green? And that's the simplest pulse. All this stuff is working for us every hour of every day. And we pull it all together on that one weekly meeting just to check in and make sure that we're still on track.
I think that this makes a lot of sense if you have 10 people like we do working on this stuff. If you have two or three though, I think it makes sense to split out your time when you have the Friday call with yourself, perhaps, or with the two other people into sections, right? Into departments. So you can kind of get a feel for this idea without having 10 people. Because I think what happens a lot of times in these calls when you only have two or three people and you have to do all these things, mind you, that the 10 people are doing, is you just start to talk about everything. It just becomes like this messy conversation.
Yeah.
You jump from this to that to this to that. So if you can set some bumpers on that conversation, like, hey, we're just going to talk about this function right now. We're just going to talk about that function right now. And then you can have a big, broad conversation at the end, perhaps. But breaking this stuff down, looking at it from a green, red, or yellow perspective, and then talking about it like that still makes sense to me when you only have two or three people on your team.
Yeah. Your pulse is like how you keep your GPS in order, right? And as you start to have these simple processes, you can add intelligence, which is like, we need an agenda. Or, hey, this person isn't prepared when they come to the meeting. Or we're talking about everything. So that's then when you start to build out your own EOS from the ground up. You're like, you know what? Meetings without agendas suck. So here we go. I'm going to sit down with this person for 10 minutes. We're going to borrow something. We're going to borrow something from EOS.
Yeah.
We're going to build our own agenda. Here's how much prep I expect you to do. We're going to start with scoreboard. We're going to move on to issues. And then we're going to talk about like the good things that we want to do next week or whatever. And that could be a sort of minimum viable agenda. And you're feeling like the meetings are productive, that you're excited to go to them, and that you're getting the most out of your investment for having shown up. That's the main goal. All right, cool. So we answered the question, what is minimum viable EOS? We're calling it GPS. We think it's something that you can set up in your business in just a week. No annoying acronyms to learn except for GPS. That's it. No more acronyms after that. No consultants required. Is it really that simple? Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty much that simple. I mean, the hard part is in the execution. Is your plan credible? That's the hard part. Do you have the right people? Just because you made a scorecard for somebody doesn't mean that they're effective. Is that person the right person? All that's the hard part. The hard part shouldn't be figuring out how to implement your operational system. That's the easy part. It all boils down to the same stuff, which is, do you have the right people doing the right things? That's it. That's the only question we're answering with all of this. And so I think the framework, the more simple it is, the more it reveals the challenge in front of us, which is that the right person doing the right thing? All right, man. Thanks for joining us on the Tropical MBA podcast. We'll be back next Thursday morning.
See you then.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Tropical MBA podcast. You can go to tropicalmba.com, get access to hundreds of back episodes and all kinds of other goodies. Load up your iPod. That is the cheapest way to fly business class on your next international flight. We will see you next Thursday morning, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.